Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello, and welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Yeah!
Justin Robert Young.
Oh, yeah!
Oh!
And Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Oh, yeah!
Yeah! Today's episode is all about how to make an entrance.
Yeah!
Question. Do you guys like to learn things?
Little bit.
I do. Yeah, I love it. I love learning, man. Every time I'm dumb, I'm like, man, I got to smarten up.
Yeah, you know what I don't like is learning things the hard way. Everyone talks about learning things the hard way. I mean, it's probably the most effective way, like by trial and error, but I don't like it. I wish there was a better way.
Yeah, smarter way.
So what are your processes for learning things?
It depends. I remember, especially in the early days of going independent, where it's like you have a goal and you need a thing and you can't afford the thing. So you're like, well, how do I learn to make the thing? And then you have to learn a thing. Just everything's kind of project oriented. But nowadays, I like learning in the abstract, like listening to nonfiction books. Although even that's kind of our job, too, because our job is to get together once a week and talk about interesting stuff that we learned, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think tutorials online in general, like that's for any kind of like skill that I need to develop is good. And then learning by example from my friends.
So, Bryce?
It's usually in response to an issue, or like if I tend to do most of my learning when I need to do something and I don't know what it is, you know. That's pretty much how any website I've ever built in my life has come about, is just googling whatever CSS is in that year and then trying to put something together.
You know, I watched there was a video clip of Elon Musk speaking at a school in Flint, Michigan, right? So he's talking to kids. And he was talking about learning, and he said kind of, you know, and he had a great Elonism, is like, you know, I tell my team, you know, whenever we need to do something, learn how to do it, go look at YouTube. It's everything. People tell you everything on YouTube. And it's, you know, very true and very much like a modern thinker to go like, yeah, there's a lot of crap, but there's like really help. Like if I'm doing coding stuff or something like this, I need to figure something out. I go to look at YouTube and like, oh, there's a video. Somebody's showing me how to do this little thing.
Yeah. Quick side note on that same thought. One thing that Bryce and Brant are both good about, but I would see Bryce do it more, and I'm trying to adopt this habit, is I would spend all this time trying to figure out, where's the freaking button to do the thing? Where's the freaking button to do the thing? And then at some point, Bryce says, it's right there. I'm like, how do you know that? And I see the phone in his hand and a video. Like, I'm trying to be better about not failing 2 or 3, 5, 7 times before I give up and go to Google. Like, once you just think of Google as your hard drive, and if it's not in RAM upstairs, then it must be on the hard drive.
Yeah.
Just go straight to the hard drive.
Because usually if anybody asks me how to do something, half the time I don't know what it is and I'm just going to Google it for them.
Right.
And so, you know.
Well, and I would get embarrassed enough after enough iterations of that I'm slowly trying to adopt the habit of just, well, what would Bryce do? He would Google it. Let's just do that first. Boom.
Yeah. It is so helpful. Like, I have my friend John, who we've had on the podcast before, is an engineer, and we'll work on projects. And it might be like, you know, he might come help us with a film thing, and we'll have like a camera, like a new camera, or we'll be doing something from building a drone or whatever. And it's funny because both of us are like that. We're like, oh, how do we do this? He'll have his laptop open on YouTube, and I'm over on YouTube, and we're just looking at tutorials. And 10 minutes later, you have a solution and actually understand it better. And yeah, I mean, it's super, super helpful to do that. Brian, I'm going to point out something about you that, like, you listen to more audiobooks, like how-to or informative stuff, than I think anybody I know.
Yeah, I don't know how it happened, but I guess I'm like 4 years into this kick. I think I've mentioned this before. Like, there are a few informational podcasts that I like a whole bunch. And at some point, I think it was a Freakonomics episode that I was listening to. Like for my entire life, anytime somebody came on to plug a book, I would enjoy the content and sit through them mentioning their book, and then politely, and then the content would end, and then I'd be like, oh man, I wish I heard more of that guy. Oh well. And then like at some point it hit me like a ton of bricks. I'm like, hey, dummy, there's a whole book of exactly the kind of stuff he's talking about right now. Why don't you listen to the book? And I was never much of a nonfiction fan until I realized that they're just extensions of your favorite guests on podcasts. And, you know, once you start getting into it, you develop your favorite nonfiction authors. You know, Justin, did you ever, I'm guessing the answer is no, because you've got so many other projects, but you still haven't listened to Conspiracy by Ryan Holiday yet, right? Yeah, nope. Like that's one that I never would have gotten there if I didn't follow through, you know, becoming a fan of Ryan Holiday stuff, because on the surface, I wouldn't have, I don't think I would have found that on the shelf and jumped in, but instead it was maybe my favorite book from last year.
So a point I want to bring it to is there's written in the comment section, I was just looking at the background of this, is like if you code, like one of the sites you go to all the time is Stack Overflow.
I've heard it described that a programmer's job is to be good and fast at finding stuff on Stack Overflow.
and it's funny because it is this farmer's almanac resource that underlines so much of how things get done. I was thinking about this the other night. You know, I was looking something else, and like Stack Overflow got like, oh, we can't find this right now. And I was like, oh my, I'm like, what's going on? You know, and I'm like, I know nothing about, I know Joel Spotsky, I know there's names associated with it. I know the Stack Exchange. I don't know anything about it. It's a privately held company. You know, they've got the most amazing resource in the world that, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of coders use every day to figure out how to do stuff. And I'm like, if you wanted to, you know, attack the vital infrastructure of the world, that would be it.
There it all
Wikipedia
is.
We could just make that stuff up.
Yeah. Is Stack Overflow is different from Stack Exchange?
It's Stack Exchange owns it.
Oh, got it. But what is the brand difference between the two?
Stack Exchange owns several different properties.
Got it. So it's goes, not a functional website.
Stack Exchange looks like just a general question and answer site.
And Stack Overflow is programming related.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. If you're like, how do I do this in, you know, Ubuntu, iOS or what, like it generally end up at a Stack Overflow site. But anyhow, they built up a great resource for this stuff, and it's super helpful. So like, Brian, how many books do you listen to a month?
I know that every year I'm on the platinum plan of Audible, which is 2 books a month. So that's 24. And I always run out every year, usually buying 6 to 8 more credits. So I'd say 30 books. And I would say 2/3 of them are nonfiction.
So wait, how many a month?
Probably 3 per month would be okay. Would be 2.5.
Justin?
I mean, lately it's been an anomaly compared to where it normally is, but I would say on average 2 a month.
Price?
Zero.
Yeah.
I don't. I know reading is not. A,
hey man,
a big
you want
part
you flip around? How many Japanese import games have you played this month?
Not zero.
Zero.
Yeah, that's right. Zero. We all have our strengths.
But I downgraded my plan. I go through, you know, periods where like I'll listen to a bunch, but then I realize like I'll go periods where like I just start accumulating credits and I have a lot of stuff. I'm one of these people like I'm horrible, like I'll start something, I'll get in like, no, don't like where this is going, no, I have a problem with this, and I don't give any credibility, I'm gonna stop, which is, you know, says more about my arrogance than probably what I'm listening to.
Yeah, in general, there are a few. I always feel guilty when that happens. I'm not going to say it never happens, but in general, I try really hard to just hate listen to the rest of it and get through it. And basically, I make a bargain with myself where it's like, all right, if you find yourself having tuned out, you're not going to back up and make sure you understood every word. That's but you're going to get through this so that you could at least know, you know, what the opinions are.
I mean, yeah, but you certainly find that in politics. Like I listen to a lot of political stuff, and a lot of it is coming from a certain perspective, and it might be a perspective that I agree with, or I find the people trustworthy, but it's still important to kind of hear what their arguments are. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm with Brian. It's like, you know, if let's just say if I fall asleep listening to it, I'm not exactly, you know, going to try to figure out where I need to go back to.
Yeah, I totally, if you're reading something, you need to know it's an opposition or different points of view. I mean, I'm a big believer in that. You've got to read other sides of stuff to understand what you're doing. And I'm thinking more like, I was reading a book that was about, like, you know, different technology companies, and, you know, they started off talking about, like, Amazon and, like, the secret of Amazon's success. And I'm like, well, that's part of it, but it's a thing we knew about, like, oh, they had unlimited capital and they keep building. I'm like, yeah, but they put distribution centers near the source of product. They did, there's other really critical, clever things they did, which were why they got that, you know, extreme amounts of capitalization. So it was one of these things like, no, you couldn't really fully explain what they did by what you, that person explained. And then they get to Apple and they're like, ah, it was just this sort of a rant. I'm like, I can read a rant, but if you don't know why, I don't know if I want to finish the rest of the book, because I don't think you understood, you know, really what worked there or why things worked, you know. And that frustrated me. Like, I know that was, there was a book that everybody loves, the Sapiens, and for me it was like, man, like, this is rehashing a lot of stuff I already read elsewhere, but this person's main thesis doesn't work for me. I don't buy it, you know. And I'm announcing, you know, like, people love that book, and I think that if somebody you listen to the first part of it, you enjoy it, I'm like, finish it. But for me, I'm like, man, like, I've read the sources on some of this stuff and I find it more interesting, and their take on it doesn't work for me. So I'm like, pass. And I'm probably missing out on something great. So, I mean, that's the question. Is like, I'm willing to say no, like, just to stop 10%, 20% to a book and move on to something else.
Well, and it's tough because I can't even say that you're wrong, because, I mean, obviously, where you're at is a pretty good place in terms of your productivity and your output and what you're hoping to get out of those books. So, yeah, I can't even fault you for that if it didn't work for you. But I know, for me, I try really hard to, some examples, I guess we could talk about, like, what books have I quit? Can't seem to get myself back to reading Blitzscaling, because what they're pitching, AKA risking everything,
mm-hmm.
is fairly antithetical to my responsibilities in our small business. Like, because I wouldn't be just gambling with what I have. I'm gambling with the promises that I've made to all of our team about, you know, growing the business and all that stuff. So it's hard for me to just, you know, listen to the stories of single 20 somethings who bravely gambled everything. And I'm like, must be nice. Some of us got three kids, well, and a team.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know how deep you got into it, but they get into explaining when and when not to, and where it applies, at what stage a company might be. So,
well, and I think I jumped off when they gave me permission to. There was a nice moment where they say, hey, it's okay. This is not for everybody. If you have this kind of business, this kind of business, this kind of business, if you need to hold on to the land that you've conquered so far, then blitzscaling probably isn't for you. And I was like, great. Now I'll listen to Harmontown.
I think it's in your case where you're looking for what I was going to say, for something that directly applies to you right now. I mean, like, Harmontown. Well, maybe.
Yeah.
but there's a version of, there could be a theoretical version of, you know, Brian Bush with Multimedia Enterprises 3 years from now, where, let's say, you know, you're expanding, you get a capital raise, and you're like, I need to hire more talent. I need to expand because I've now become, you know, a super producer. Well, and I need to blitzscale.
And there's also what I should do, the lesson I should take away from it, is remember that it's not the whole organization that needs to gamble everything, but there are speculative silos within this stuff, you know, as we launch new properties or whatever, like, hey, this property is only slow growing, so let's, you know, let's go all in and possibly end up having to cancel this one property. So I know there are lessons there to be learned. Yeah. I just need to, I don't have anything at the front of my mind, no lens to view everything through.
Yeah, and it's bandwidth. How much do you want to spend your business knowledge bandwidth on something that you say doesn't apply to you at this point? You know, and I heartily agree. It's one of these things too, where, you know, blitzscaling is very much about, like, a winner takes all sort of thing, kind of a Peter Thiel sort of, you know, competition is for losers mentality, where you know, how do you grow so fast and dominate, you know, which is great for some businesses, but other businesses, it just, and particularly content businesses, it's a different thing, you know? So,
you know,
I understand.
Talking about, you know, getting off of books or dropping books that you find are, might not be helpful or just not entertaining, whatever. Like that's something that on, like, especially on the Scam Nation side, we kind of deal with in the general of like, how much of a video should be entertaining versus educational. And I think because Brian, I feel like our dynamic is we kind of have, like, I think you lean more towards being, you know, entertaining, and I lean towards more being educational.
Right.
Which I think puts us in a good balance.
Yeah, we got a Lennon McCartney thing going. Yeah.
But, you know, that's something that comes up because, you know, Scam Nation is very tutorial focused. I mean, Scam School was already, you know, very much about showing people how to do stuff and but also being entertaining and
yeah,
that's something that we deal with, but I'm sure every property has to deal with, you know, takeaways and entertaining, or, you know, how much meat do you have versus how much flash?
Yeah.
I would actually be curious to hear you guys drill into that a little bit on, as I know that Scam Nation, based on the content that is coming out now, yeah, well, here, let me rewind 2 seconds. Sure. Scam School was Brian teaches you a trick, but also you're hanging out with Brian Brushwood. You are in the place that you would imagine having the most fun with Brian Brushwood is. Brian Brushwood's being funny and charming to the random people there, and you also learn a trick. And so now it is both wish fulfillment in, like, this is what I will do with this trick, as well as teaching a very simple thing that now that I have this knowledge, I'm going to be able to do, because that's the conceit of the show of you teaching randoms, right?
Right.
Whereas Scam Nation is, hey, here's how you do a thing. And Brian's pleasant and he's fun, but it's not the applied element of it. There's less wish fulfillment, more let's just show you how to do stuff. Now, both are popular genres.
Mm-hmm.
But what is that mix?
I would say there are a number of reasons that we were running out of bandwidth on Scam School, partly because, like, the bedrock stuff since day one was hand me literally any non-magician and I will do a type of trick that by the end of this 7 to 15 minutes they will be able to perform back to me. And so nobody can tell me that this is exposure because they're clearly learning. Nobody can tell me that it's not beginner appropriate because we're taking people who have never even maybe held a deck of cards or whatever. Like,
but the issues with that are it limits us to only beginner types of magic.
Correct.
And on a logistical production side, it takes a lot of time to find randoms or to put us in a position to be. It's a lot of wrangling to go to a bar and film,
sure.
And that doesn't scale easily.
And for that that C block, you know, the A block is the pitch of, like, me doing the trick and the trick looks awesome and you think I want to learn that. The B block is me teaching the trick, and then the C block, which was very critically important for Scam School, was them doing it back to me. That C block is important as a prover to validate the idea that this is something that you at home will learn, and it's valuable in that people would make the type of mistakes that the people at home would make. Mm-hmm. But it could take 30 to 40 minutes just to get that 90-second block, and that is there probably will be a time that we have the resources to do that. Mm-hmm. But for right now, as we transition, we are working on, we're back to a shoestring budget,
right?
As Scam Nation is an independent property in a way that Scam School was not. So we are taking advantage of this by sort of setting up roughly a 6-month trial balloon to say, like, okay, well, let's not argue, Brian and Bryce, about which is more important, the tutorial or the fluff, mm-hmm. and what the ratio should be. Let's run an experiment. And so we are thankfully in a place right now where the theory we're operating on is, let's do all meat. Let's get right to the point.
Right.
Let's give something in the first 15 seconds that there's no need for walking down the street telling people what channel they're on. They already know what channel they're on. There's no need, get right to the point. What am I going to see? And the theory being, maybe the episodes don't pop immediately.
But they're even more evergreen compared to Scam School, which
exactly
are fine. But it's like looking at, you know, even if you look at some of the Scam Schools we did, you know, a year ago, or even a year ago, and you compare it to the way Scam School was shot, you know, almost 10 years ago, it was still a completely different show. And so over time, what's happened is that format reduced itself. And so because we had sort of this transitional point, at least part one, you know, one of my objectives is to see how far can we reduce that element if this is already the trend in the long term.
Right. And along with that, there comes some conventions that we were locked into with Scam School, because sure. Scam School was targeted at non-magicians. That meant they didn't care that the move is called the Zero Shuffle. They didn't care that it's called the Size Stebbin Stack or whatever. And in fact, if you called things by their proper name, it reduced the probability that anybody would click on them. And so every single title was like Amazing Card Trick blows their minds, and again, that's more likely to get a click. It's less helpful to young magicians who are serious about the craft and need to access a quick tutorial to learn X, Y, and Z. So for this 6 months in Scam Nation, we're really trying to focus on creating a healthy library of content where everything gets to the point, and hopefully it's still fun and personable, but also equally possibly more important is that there's a clarity, because one of the benefits, and we've talked about this on After Things, is play to your strengths. Figure out what you have to offer that nobody else has. And in the world of magic, nobody can match our production capabilities. Our production capabilities are slick and polished and straight to the point. Every other tutorial is a pair of hands, or you could go like, you know, Chris Ramsey has taught a lot of stuff, but his is more on the fluff side of things, more on traditional YouTuber. Sure. We're going to spend $10,000 in a magic shop. Like, you're not going to walk away knowing a new move from that. And that's fine. We're figuring out how to be Coke to Chris Ramsey's Pepsi. And this is what we're doing there. Now, eventually the plan is, and this is the other agonizing thing, is you go to war with the army you have, not the one you want to have. Part of the reason we're building out the property is so that there is a place for us to constantly be having top of the line guests who come in for 3 to 5 days at a time, and we do collaborations with something that won't cost me $1,200 for hotels, something that I don't have to, you know, there'll be food and drinks and everything will be catered, you know, and they could bring their spouse and all that stuff.
But also like a controlled shooting space.
Exactly.
Versus.
So we can get straight to the point. We don't have to book chaotic venues. Everything will be much more efficient. So efficient, hopefully, that we're able to release content 3 or 4 times a week featuring all these performers at the top of their game. But we can't get there because they don't have a place to poop yet. Yeah. You know, it's like, so
and,
for
and so
now,
that's like the other big objective, right? Like talking about reducing the format to being, you know, straight to the point, but also we've seen with Modern Rogue, and we've seen over the years with Scam School, that the more active a channel is, the more popular it tends to be.
Correct.
And so because there's been this transition, because various things, you know, our output has been reduced on Scam Nation compared to where it was 12 months ago. But by hopefully trimming down what a video looks like, having different types of formats, you know, like we did this one video about this scientific experiment video with just... It was just you relaying, you know, this experiment that was a previous Scam School episode was taking place. That really doesn't have much of a fit in the Scam School format, quote unquote.
Oh no, it was undoable in the Scam School format because it didn't have an A block, a B block, a C block. It didn't have up to two. I mean, this is the other thing, is people are like, there's a small contingency of people who are like, didn't you teach us like 9 years ago? I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
It's in a 16 minute long video surrounded by an ad for Gamefly and the fact that Netflix will send you DVDs by mail. And nobody will watch that. Instead, we're doing a 4 minute version that gets straight to the point and delivers to you the important stuff.
And it allows us to do community sort of stuff. Like we've done some of these mailbag type videos answering like letters and stuff. And I think that's a part of the scaling up, is like opening up the format and opening up the type of thing that we put out.
Yeah. And I think that there was a necessity in kind of declaring bankruptcy on that channel a little bit in terms of like saying we aren't just Scam School. So like we have to kind of take Scam School away for a lot of reasons. And here is what replaces it. And we will continue to grow and evolve it. I guess my one question would be, though, you did launch another property in Modern Rogue from the Scam School channel. And that to me gets into some of more of the like wish fulfillment of like Brian Brushwood is this cool guy who goes to bars and is like the most confident person in the world and does magic for randoms. Right. Now Modern Rogue is a different kind of wish fulfillment in, hey, what if I had infinite money and cool friends, that gets into that same core demo. But do you ever want to bring some of that element that did I view as a viewer was kind of a splitting off of like Scam Nation now has a lot of the knowledge stuff and Modern Rogue, although you do learn things there, is a lot more of the horsing around, like, mm-hmm. isn't it cool to have this life kind of stuff. Do you is part of that, do you ever see Scam Nation having some of that, like, hey, like wish fulfillment cool stuff again, or is it evolving in a different direction?
That's a really good question. I suppose that will depend entirely on the amount of guest talent that we're able to accrue on Scam Nation. Scam Nation, I would love it if...
It seems like any aspirational element of Scam Nation would be very guest heavy.
Correct. And
so that's where it would come from. Look at these cool... Now we're just in a position where we can capture the slice of life of an awesome rad magician who is like you want to be 9-year-old who's watching this because they are obsessed with card magic.
Yeah, I want to stop. I mean, I spent 10 years on Scam School loudly shouting how great I am, and now I want to hear how great other people are. And I want to be Jimmy Fallon, not a guest on Jimmy Fallon, you know. And a really good, I mean, if you want to distill it, here's a thing that nobody's doing that hopefully I'll be first at is Penn and Teller's Fool Us on YouTube. That's where I want to be, where it's a great showcase. You have seasoned professionals with time-tested material. Imagine, I'll just spill the beans on this. Imagine Penn and Teller's Fool Us, where you do the trick, and then you think about like how it's similar to something you did or didn't see before. Imagine Penn and Teller's Fool Us, only the third act is, okay, now walk us through the entire thing and teach it to us. That is something that you cannot do on the CW, partly because it's a broadcast medium and it would create a whole bunch of problems and people would fear, but losing something by coming on the show. But you can do on Scam Nation because it is a community where everybody has to subscribe and come in and they'll be praised and get rock star status and drive sales of their DVDs or get them booked or whatever. I want it to be the place that all of magic's bests and brightests come to share their stuff.
So that does seem like you guys are driving more in the I'm already interested in magic audience.
Yes and no, because what we can't do right now, I mean, I guess we can, but what we could not do on Scam School was have somebody come on, like let's say Tom Mullico was still around. We couldn't just come on and perform his cigarette eating routine for us, and then that's the episode. Everybody would howl and lose their mind. They're like, I come to Scam School to learn stuff or whatever. But Scam Nation, that'd be a fine showcase, and it'd be something they'd be proud, and that's something everybody would be thrilled to share with everybody else. We could do just a performance, and that's it. And yeah, it's that flexibility that especially if we're doing – you know, 2 to 4 posts per week that never could have happened under Scam School. And I'm super thrilled that eventually we'll get to that place.
Yeah. Where you guys are going is interesting, but I think what's fascinating about where you guys are going just as a whole is that there is a lot of kind of explosion of the like DNA that in many ways was started between your stage show and Scam School. Like that's where the Brian Brushwood DNA kind of begins there and has been exploding and growing and changing, but now is at its biggest point of expansion, like a big and becoming more intense. So I think it makes all the sense in the world for Scam School to be something that is performance focused and tutorial focused. And, you know, if you really like Brian Brushwood being a cool bro that you want to imagine as your best friend, there are a couple other places where that happens.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, he is everybody's best bro, right?
Of course. Yeah. I love everybody, great, right? Except for Gillette.
Oh.
Oh yeah, you got into a fight with Gillette. Geez.
I don't know. Fight,
not
fight,
Penn Gillette.
Fight implies that I actually care.
Well, you tweeted enough about it.
I don't know. I thought you were half joking, and then I saw Bonnie's post on Facebook where she did seemed like the opposite of joking.
Oh,
like,
no. Yeah. Well, I went downstairs and I was like, yep. So anyway, I poked a hornet's nest. I'm gonna go to the gym. Bye. Didn't care. It is interesting, though. I don't know. So part of me wanted to make this a Night Attack thing just to ask the question of whether or not it's a coincidence or not. Because the only people...
So set this up. If people don't know.
I'm glad Bryce said, not Penn Gillette, because at first I'm like, oh, geez.
Yeah. You're just talking about
it. I got your back on this one. I'm not comfortable about this. So but.
Gillette, the home and body solution company, has a new brand, and... this advertisement, I guess, that they have on Target, the tagline is classically groomed, modernly rogue.
Right. And so basically, look, some ad copywriter somewhere wrote this. And everybody, so what are your moves? First of all, modernly rogue. How common a phrase is that? Do a quick Google search for the words for the phrase modernly rogue. You'll come up with zero times has anybody searched for those. If you search Modern Rogue, you'll see that there was nothing up until, like, I don't know, 2006 to 2012, where it was only casually mentioned if somebody was saying, hey, what's a Modern Rogue deck for me to play on Magic the Gathering? And then our show came out, and all of a sudden, that's what everybody's searching for, right? So, truthfully, I would just assume this is some copywriter who heard the phrase Modern Rogue, didn't remember where from, thought it would sound good, although it's really awkwardly put on there. So, well, what do you do on that? Like, it's clearly inspired by, you know, your brand or your name. The odds of that being a random thing that somebody would say, like, that's not even a phrase. It's a nonsense thing. Either way, even if it is a coincidence, things I want, not for people to think of Modern Rogue as that weird ass dumb phrase that Gillette uses on their hair care products. Tools I have to do that, not lawyers, because that's dumb and I'd have to prove that I was damaged and I've not been damaged. The things I can do, point out this is a dumb phrase and I want you to really associate pain every time you think about using it. And so I shouted about it on Twitter. It was fun.
You know, product activation, you know.
Product activation? What do you mean?
You know, there's a very popular YouTube channel called The Modern Rogue.
And that's the other thing.
Modernly Rogue.
Well, now one of the host's Twitter accounts has told everyone about this hot new Gillette brand.
Yeah. Win-win. It's a collaboration between the two of us.
Hot collab.
I just would be like, not Barbara Streisand it.
Why? Why not? Definitely Barbara Streisand it. I mean, it's not going to even be noticeable on their balance sheet. And meanwhile, me shouting about it is going to get a lot of people to say, what's this about? Oh, Brian has a show called Modern Rogue. I'm the one who wins in this. And they're the ones who look like asshats.
Okay, let's go to picks.
All right.
I don't. You're it's a different game than I understand. So I don't know. I don't. Picks.
I have an after things pick. I talked about this probably a month or so ago when they announced that it was coming back, and it came back, and it's the Netflix show The OA. So the first season is super weird because it's about a girl who comes back after 7 years and she disappeared when she was young and she was blind and now she's grown up and she's not blind anymore. And so it's a lot of like telling the story of like what happened and the people that she meets when she's back. season two is like a completely different show, and it's really good for it.
Does it have the same actor, the same cast?
Yeah. The pretty much the whole original cast is there, plus a bunch of new people. In fact, the only thing I think is the big negative point on season two is that there's kind of too much going on, and it's fine all the things that happen, but you feel like you kind of didn't go anywhere by the end of it. A story about an angel hopping between dimensions because she's using yoga cheat codes to hop into a different world is enough. That's very good. I don't know how to describe it.
Should you skip the first season?
No, watch them both.
Okay,
watch them both. But I never know how to talk about this show because it's insane. I did not watch Lost, but I think this is probably what people felt like when they were watching Lost.
Right on.
Because it's crazy. It's crazy. So that's the OA.
Cool. My pick, I don't have a creative pick right now, but I do have the continued desire to keep watching Schitt's Creek.
Ooh.
I saw this episode last night where Catherine O'Hara is running for city council,
yeah,
and she can't find, she assumes that there's going to be a scandal because she took nude photos in the 70s and then is upset that nobody on the internet has posted her nude photos from the 70s. It's very funny. Catherine O'Hara is hilarious.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's awesome. I got a pick. I probably already said it before, but I finally finished season 3 of True Detective. Holy cow, does that show stick the landing in a deeply satisfying way? Have you guys seen season 3 yet?
I'm halfway through. I'm getting harumped over here because I've been supposed to finish and I haven't finished it yet. I can't wait. All right, I believe you, Brian. Great pick. I'll go to mine now because I'm so afraid of spoilers.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I know I'm outside the window of I should have watched it by now. And
I mean, I only finished it a few days ago. Spoiler alert, I loved it. Ha ha. Now you're spoiled.
I'm hearing great things. My pick, this is my kind of, I keep saying this again. So I've been working on a little app, an iOS app, and I'm like, hey, man, it's been a while since I did anything in iOS. And I forgot everything. So let me go do a tutorial and let me go to Udemy and pay 12 bucks. And some of the tutorials are not quite up to date. And this was a case, one of them I did, but there are other ones that are. But anyway, it was still well enough to get me back into, okay, now I feel comfortable doing, you know, UI views and all this sort of stuff and know how to figure out what I'm doing. And so I'm just a big believer, you know, back to the original topic of learning things, of like, go, you know, I had a friend that's like, hey, I want to put together some like documents for my business. I'm like, well, you know, use like InDesign. He's like, I don't know anybody who knows how to use it. I'm like, you know, you can spend, you know, do a 5-hour course on it, you know? And to some people like, oh, 5 hours. I don't know. Like 5 hours for a skill that will be with you for the rest of your life. That's a no brainer. You know, like, You can make an app. You can learn how to make an app in 4 hours. You know, it won't necessarily be great, but the mystery of it will be solved for you. And so I'm just a big believer in like, learn these tools. Learn these tools that are all around you. So,
yeah,
you know, Udemy is a great way to do that. YouTube too.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.